In India, after the Vedas, I have told you there are four Vedas, Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, Athara Veda. I don't expect that you will remember these four names. Don't worry, because I'll speak so many times that you will remember in any case, in due course. So there are four Vedas, Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Atharva Veda, Sama Veda, Atharva Veda. After these four compositions were ready, then several developments took place in India, where this knowledge which was contained in the Veda got veiled, obscured, even misunderstood. Over years and centuries, the knowledge of the Veda got obscured. Then there came about a period, a number of investigators arose, a number of them. Just as in the Vedic period there were hundreds of seekers, similarly now also, after hundreds of years after the Veda, again a large number of seekers arose in India. And they tried to recover what was in the Veda. Not only did they recover, but in respect of the knowledge which was contained in the Veda, they brought that knowledge into a final form. The form in which they expressed their findings and the sharpness which came out as a result of it was so great that they claimed, or those who read the compositions now, they said it's a culmination of the Veda. Now, culmination is a word in Sanskrit, is called anta. When you read the end, it's called anta. Just as END is also end, it is similar to anta. The word end is similar to word anta, because there may be connection between the Sanskrit word and English word. The end and anta, both the words are very similar. So because it was supposed to be the end, the culmination of the Veda, therefore they called it Veda Anta. You combine together in French as you have liaison. In Sanskrit also there is liaison. Instead of speaking of Veda Anta, they put together and say it's Vedanta. So Vedanta is nothing but the end of the Veda. Now this Vedanta consists of a number of small compositions which are all called Upanishads. This is a word which you might have heard, Upanishads. UPANISHADS. It's a plural. Upanishad is a singular. Upanishad is plural. All called Upanishads. There are about 200 of them. But at least 12 are regarded as principal, main. 12 Upanishads. It was called Upanishad because even that word you should understand why it was called Upanishad. Upanishad has got three words in it. Upa, Ni and Sad. Sad means to sit. There is also a connection between the word sit and sad. Sad means sit. Even the word asseyez-vous in French, sit, yeah, you sit. The word asseyez is very much connected with the word sad. Because if you see the spelling of asseyez, it is A-S-S-I-E-D, isn't it? At the end there is D, although it is silent in pronunciation. So, sad is to sit, ni is close, to sit close, and upa means near. When you sit near and close, and when you hear from the teacher by sitting very near to him, is called Upanishad. All that was told by the teacher to the student, when he sat close and very near the teacher, whatever was told by the teacher, what was composed in that content is therefore called Upanishad. That which has been communicated to the students when the students sat very close and near the teacher. It has also a very inner meaning, this word. When you sit very close and near the teacher, then you can communicate best what is secret knowledge. Whenever you want to say something very deep, very subtle, you will see that you read 100 books, but you visit a teacher, sit with him for 5-10 minutes, and what he can give you in 5-10 minutes by talking to you, it will be incomparable. There are certain things which you cannot communicate by writing, you cannot communicate by giving discourses from a high platform. You can explain certain things only when almost you whisper into the ears of your pupil. When you sit very near and you explain. That is why in India a great value was given to this condition or situation where students can sit near the teacher even they may sit in silence. It is said that the teacher communicates best when he speaks least, when he hardly speaks, and yet a few words that he utters, and that is sufficient. Ekam eva advitiyam is a Sanskrit word. The teacher simply tells you, ekam eva advitiyam, one without the second. Only two words, one without the second. He doesn't explain what is it. Ekam eva dviti. He doesn't explain. Like mother saying, super school, last school, after school, no school. These are like Upanishadic words. You have to find out afterwards. You may contemplate on and on and on and try to understand what it means. Similarly, this is one of the famous sentences of the Upanishad. Ekam eva advitiyam, one without the second. There is only one reality. All this is one. There is no second reality. This is what it means. This is one of the greatest sentences of the Upanishads. There is only one without the second. Now we shall come back to this sentence again. But for a while, I'll introduce two other words. These two other words are Nyaya, and the second word is Sankhya. Nyaya and Sankhya. These are two Sanskrit words. In fact, Vedanta is a Sanskrit word. Upanishad is a Sanskrit word. Nyaya is a Sanskrit word. Sankhya is a Sanskrit word. You can't escape Sanskrit at all when you come to philosophy. So we should be ready to receive Sanskrit words and try to understand them. Actually, there is a rule in Greek philosophy. Anybody who wants to study Greek philosophy has to study Greek. It's a rule. If you want to study German philosophy, you should learn German. Even today, this rule applies in all the outside universities. Similarly, there is no rule, but there has to be a rule that if you want to study Indian thought, Indian philosophy, then you have to learn Sanskrit, because for 5,000 years this philosophy has been written in Sanskrit, as against only 1,000 years during which this philosophy has been written partly in Sanskrit and partly in so many different languages. So consider the value of 5,000 years and 1,000 years. So if a philosophy has been written in Sanskrit for so many years, and if you really want to go into the heart of it, Sanskrit is inevitable.